For this kind of a test, no, there's no problem. If you want, go ahead.
Okay. Put this vocabulary on the blackboard. What you need is a blank sheet of paper. That's all you'll need. You can go ahead and take that out. And you can begin as soon as I go. I'm going to be writing some of these down in English. I want you to give me the Greek. If it's a noun, I want the article with it. And if it's an adjective, I need the endings also for the feminine and the neuter. All you need to do is put the ending down in the standard dictionary form. Okay, so there'll be 25 of these. And I'll start on this side of the board. I'm going to get this back out of the way so everybody can see. If you have any obstructions or anything, go ahead and move around. But accommodate that if you need to. And just for a fun, if you get all the accents right on the whole test, you'll get a bonus of 2 points out of 100. Little incentive.
What if we get them wrong?
If you get them wrong, nothing taken off if you get them wrong. Okay. Right, you might as well go for it anyway. You know, guess if you happen to get them all right, you might redeem a couple of other areas. But you won't get anything off if you don't have the accents right. But if you happen to get them all right on the test, then we'll give you a bonus of 2 points. Okay? All right. No, you don't need to put it in English. In other words, if it's got the article on it in the Greek, you don't need to put it in English. But if I give an English word that's a noun, be sure to put the article with it in Greek. And if it's an adjective, be sure that the endings are for the feminine and the neuter are on. Thank you. Yeah, it makes all the difference in the word. Never see an athlete over a counter. Oh, you're not finished. Two more times. Okay, take about 2 more minutes.
All right, let's exchange papers, if you will. Make sure your names are. Now, scoring these, don't mark anything if it's right. And each one's worth 4 points, so there'll be a total of 100 points possible on the test. And the way to count points off is this way. It's 1 point off for every wrong letter, breathing mark, or ending on an adjective. And in other words, the adjective endings like high notes here. Suppose they omitted one of those endings or got the wrong ending or something like that, and then off of here instead of an eight or something like that, be 1 point off. So 1 point off for each letter, for each adjective ending, for each breathing mark. Don't worry about accents, like I said. 2 points for the article on a noun. If the article's wrong on a noun, that's 2 points off because that's an intrinsic part of the word. So 2 points for an article, 1 point for every letter, up to a maximum of 4. You can't miss any more than 4, no matter how many you got wrong. Theoretically, you could get as many wrong as there are letters, you know, but you had the wrong word entirely or something. And if it's wrong word entirely, then, of course, it's 4 off. Okay, questions? All right. I need a different color chalk here. For a holy, it should be hagios. And rough breathing and cute accent there. You don't have to score on the accent, but for those of you that are checking to see if you got them all right, for the 2-point bonus, that's where you should look. Okay.
And this is Alta and Omer Canoe for the ending. Both need to be there. Okay, Ho Huyos, what does that mean? Son, right. Hey, Grafe, writing or scripture? Writing or scripture, I'll accept either one. Kainos, Edas Om, what does that mean?
New,
right. Adjective. Word is Ho Logos. Acute accent on the first syllable. See, you need ho there. If it is hey, it's 2 points off. Temple is to hieron. Rough breathing on the iota. This is not a diphthong. And acute accent on the last syllable. To hieron. So make sure the rough breathing is over the iota, not over the epsilon. This is not a diphthong. And if you're watching for accents, there should be an accent on to, a grave accent on to, and then acute on your own.
If they transpose the iota and epsilon, would that be negative one?
Oh boy, just transpose them, huh? Mm-hmm. No, I think that to be consistent, we'll have to go to two wrong letters. Otherwise, we're going to get into some hopeless problems. Okay. Okay. Number seven, Todoron, is what?
Gift.
Right, gift. Hetera, widow. Eternal, this is an unusual adjective that only has masculine and neuter form endings, and the feminines get the same as the masculine, so you should just have this, smooth breathing and acute accent over the omega, and comma own. If they put an extra thing, if they put an eta or something in there, that's minus one.
What about placement of the rough breathing?
Placement of the rough breathing should be over, the smooth breathing should be over the iota.
Yes.
Now, if it's over the wrong letter, it's one off. Okay? Yeah, it should be over the iota. In other words, if it's a little bit, you know, you lose a little bit of judgment. If you got it one micron off to the right or left, you know, I should have a little mercy. But if it's sitting squarely over the alpha, then minus one. Okay. The order is kind of a skinny letter. It's hard to get it right on top. All right. Number 10, honomos. What's that?
No.
Law. Right. And vine should be hey ampelos. This is a second declension feminine. Okay, smooth breathing on the alpha, and accent also on the alpha. Hey, ampelos. Don't count anything off for the accent. Okay. Oh, oikos, what does that mean?
House.
I think we get a word economy from that word. Okay, then number 13, hey, a rain, a
peace.
Okay, number 14, brothers, ho adelphos. Acute accent in the last little bit. Breathing on the alpha. Four out of those. Okay, number 15, truth is hey aletheia. Okay, smooth breathing on the alpha. And acute accent on the eta if you're watching for the accent. Four apostolos. Obviously, apostle. Number 17, slave, podulos. If you're watching for accents, you should have a circumflection for the upsilon there. Death, pothanatos. Agathos, what does that mean? Good. Okay, good. There's another word, kalos, that also means good. It has a slightly different connotation. Yes.
What do you accept
kind
for that?
Oh, for agathos, kind?
Okay.
It's got kind of a moral sense of good to it.
I don't know if anybody, did anybody look that up in a dictionary and give you that for it? They might, as a secondary meaning. Leave a question mark on that. I'll check it and see if we can get some partial good for it. It's got that kind of a tenor to it in terms of good. But we'll definitely get partial credit for it. I'm not sure how much yet. Okay, number 20. Righteous or just should be dikaios, delta iota kappa, alpha iota sigma, accent on the first syllable. And this is going to be alpha, I'll look at nu. Alpha type because it's dim ends in a vowel. That's good. Glory is heidoxa. Cute accent on the and soul is heipsuke. Hey. Chi, ypsilon, chi, eta. Accent on the last syllable. Hey, basileia is what? Kingdom. And number 24, beloved, should be agape tos. Blue breathing. Agape tos, and that's eta. Oh, need the accent on both of those too, because the accent stays in the left syllable.
Are you counting for those accents on that one?
Well, that's the way the dictionary forms are written with the accents there. If they get the accent on this last syllable and then just put it eta and on, we'll go ahead and give it to them. In other words, if you're looking for the accents. And when it's all said and done, if they've got it on this last syllable and if they omitted it there, we'll give them credit for knowing where the accent is. Okay, then disciple homate te. Hold the masculine first declension and the accent in the last syllable. Okay, score the points, 4 points off, the 4 points for each one, total of 100 points possible. Then look at the accents. If the accents are all correct, then add 2 points to that. So a person could potentially get 102 points. Lenny?
How about king for kingdom?
Oh, king for kingdom? Ooh, give them, take off 2 points. Give them half credit for it. They got half the idea. Yes? Oh, necros for death instead of thanatos? That's an adjective. We'll have to call 4 points off. It's a different form of word. Oh, the article's right, but the word's wrong. Boy, we'll take anybody else have a situation where the article was right but the whole word was wrong? Anybody else have a situation like that? In other words, they got one example is the word was supposed to be hey irene, but they had or what was it was supposed to be?
It was supposed to be hey
aletheia. Oh, it's supposed to be hey aletheia and hey irene. Take off 3 points for that. Give them 1 point for getting the article right. I'm not going to give them full 2 points because the. Yes?
I want to make sure I'm agreeing on the accent.
Right.
Right.
Right. If they missed anything, don't add anything. Don't take anything off, but just don't add any bonus points. The two bonus points only if you get all the accents right. The only exception is that on this adjective where the accent should have been the ending, if they got the accent on agape tos on the last syllable, even if they didn't put it on the other two, that's okay. All right. Okay, pass it back to the owner. Take a look at your paper. Make sure that everything's A-OK on it.
So
yes.
Are we subtracting from 102 or
from 100? No, just subtract from 100. Subtract from 100. And then when you get all done with subtraction, if they got the accents all right, then add 2 points. But, you know, I don't know how many people will get the accents all right. In the past, that hasn't happened very frequently. Did we get one with the accents all right? Okay, good. Good. So you could potentially get 102 on it if you got everything right and then got the accents right also. Okay, pass them to the front, if you will, and then we'll take a look at those exercises in Lesson 10, which were tentatively assigned for today. If you didn't get a chance to do them, that's all right. We'll do them in class because they're just translation into English anyway. Be a good translation exercise. I'd probably better erase this in case there's anybody that... some tape that comes in here.
any of the papers?
For you that are in Hebrew as well as Greek, how many of you felt that the Greek vocabulary is easier to learn?
Oh.
Unanimous. The typical response.
Why don't you give us 50 Greek words and 30 Hebrew?
That's about the right ratio, I think.
The problem with Hebrew vocabulary is that everything looks so much alike, especially verb forms. They're all three consonants, and some verbs are only different by one consonant, and the vowel patterns are the same, and just after a while you get kind of scrambled trying to figure them all out and separate them. Okay, lesson 10 in the workbook. As I didn't formally assign this, so if you don't have it done, you're not necessarily supposed to have it done, but this is a good one to do in class anyway. 10D is just a matter of filling out this paradigm. And so we'll go ahead and do this. I'll give you the answers to it here, and you can just fill them in if you don't have them. And I'm going to be giving you, after we finish chapter 11, I'll be giving you the total paradigm for first and second declensions on the board, and you can put that down in your notes. So you just follow the model here. Number one was hokorios, and then the genitive is omicron upsilon, the accusative omicron nu, the neuter omicron iota, the genitive omega nu, and the accusative omicron upsilon sigma. Now number two, hemera should be, the genitive should be alpha sigma, and why is it alpha sigma rather than eta sigma? Right, the stem ends in a row. So we've got alpha type endings all the way through. So it should be alpha sigma. The accusative should be alpha nu. The plural, the nominative plural should be alpha iota. Genitive plural, omega nu. In fact, you can fill that column out right away. You know, all the way down, omega nu is real simple. And then the accusative should be alpha sigma. Alpha sigma. Okay, then hey hamartia should be just identical to the column, to the row above. Alpha sigma, alpha nu, alpha iota, omega nu, alpha sigma. It's just another one that ends in a vowel. It's going to do the same things as the ones that ends in row. Okay, number four, hey phoné should be eta sigma for the genitive singular. Eta nu, eta nu for the accusative singular. Then the plural should be alpha iota, omega nu, and alpha sigma. Okay, number five, todendron, neuter here. The genitive should be omicron upsilon, just like the genitive of the masculine nouns there. Then the accusative is omicron nu, plural is alpha, in the nominative, genitive, omega nu, and the accusative, alpha. Hey, ho prophetes should be omicron upsilon in the genitive. This is the one you have to watch on this one because it's the one that's unusual as far as the first declension. You don't normally see these omicron type endings in first declension, but in the genitive singular, on a first declension masculine, the genitive form is omicron upsilon. So omicron upsilon, then the accusative should be, accusative singular is eta nu, the plurals alpha iota, omega nu, and alpha sigma. Hey thalassa, this is one of those other kinds. So the genitive should be eta sigma. It goes back to the etas in the genitive and in the dative, which we haven't gotten to yet. So it's eta sigma. The accusative is alpha nu. And the plurals alpha iota, omega nu, and alpha sigma. So one thing you notice, all first declension nouns in the plurals are the same. Alpha iota, omega nu, alpha sigma. So the plurals are the same for all first declension nouns, but the singulars, there's some variation. Okay? Yeah, but neuters aren't first declension. There's no first declension neuters. Right. All first declension nouns, whether they be masculine or feminine, are going to have the same in the plural. But the neuters now, remember, they're second declension. Okay? Number eight is the next one. Hey, ampelos, the ending should look just like the top row. Omicron upsilon, are Omicron Nu, Omicron Iota, Omega Nu, and Omicron Upsilon Sigma. So the endings are just like the second declension masculine now. Okay, any questions on any of those? We'll give you the total paradigm on the blackboard a little bit later on. Okay, exercise 10E. Refer to the vocabulary in paragraph 73 and translate the following into English. Ho tes ecclesias mathe tes. How would that be translated in English? Anybody? Yes, the disciple of the church or the church's disciple. Either way you wanted to put it. The church's disciple or the disciple of the church. Number, and what position would you call that, the genitive phrase tes ecclesias, what position is it occupying? First attributive position, right. Number two, ho tu mathe tu ecclesia. How is that to be translated? Yes, the church of the disciple, now it's just the opposite. Now it's the church of the disciple or the disciple's church. Rather than the church of disciple, it's the disciple's church. Okay, and again, that's first attributive position. Number three, to technon to tu dulu. How would that be translated? Yes, the slave's child or the child of the slave. The child of the slave. And what position is that genitive phrase occupying? Second attributive, yes. We have the article repeated on the noun and then the genitive phrase. Okay, number four, he doxa he tes diathekes. Translation? The glory of the covenant. Right, the glory of the covenant, or the covenant's glory, if you wanted to. And that is, again, second attributive position. Number five, he tes doxes diatheke. Okay, how would that be translated? Yes, the covenant of the glory, the covenant of the glory. Or if you were looser, you know, you could say the glorious covenant. That's what he suggests. I'd be more inclined to say the covenant of the glory, just because the fact that it's using a genitive phrase here means something to me. Okay, number six. Hey, ecclesia, hey, ton, mate, ton. How would that be translated? Yes, the church of the disciples, plural. The church of the disciples, plural. Or the disciples' church, but make sure that's disciples, plural. The apostrophe should come after the S if you say the disciples' church. It's the disciples, plural, church. Or the church of the disciples is a less ambiguous way to say it if you're going to say it out, if it's spoken. Okay, number seven. Hei hodos, teis doxes.
The road of the glory.
The road of the glory. The road of the glory. Or the way of the glory. Yes, right. Okay. Now you can start giving your sermon titles in Greek to really impress the congregation. All right. Number eight. Yes. Number eight. Hetes hodu doxa. How would that be translated? Just reverse the terms. Yeah, the glory of the road. The glory of the road. Or the road's glory. Okay. Number nine. Ta tondulon techna. Okay, not child, but children. Yeah, plural both counts. The children of the slaves. The children of the slaves. Or the slaves, plural children. You want to use a possessive. Number 10, hai ton diathekon hodoi.
The roads,
plural of the covenants, plural. Okay. Questions? Yes, Dan.
On something like five,
will
we have to have in both the articles, or should we say like the covenant of glory?
I would on the first as a rough rule to start with, go ahead and translate it with the article, just for your own benefit at the present time. Now, in actuality, a translator is probably just going to say the covenant of glory. But he, in doing so, he may be glossing it a little bit. In other words, it comes down to the issue of whether you're going to try to paraphrase to make something smooth in English, or whether you're going to try to transmit accurately all the little nuances of the Greek. And if you want to translate the nuances of the Greek, then go ahead and put the article in. For the benefit of the Greek, the person who knows Greek grammar, who knows that the article's there, it's good to know that the article's there, because it's not the same as not having the article. It's just that in English, sometimes we won't use the article, even when something is fairly definite. Our rules aren't quite the same as far as the way translations go, so you won't see a 100% correspondence article in Greek to article in English in every case. So it's just, it's kind of a debate, you know. If you looked at it in Rotherham, you'd probably see the article. If you look at it in Good News for Modern Man, you might not even see the phrase. But the point, you know, if you looked at it in King James or something, you probably wouldn't see the article. That one's kind of a, you know, most of the time, you can be, most of the time you can translate the article in English, the article's in Greek, but there are a few exceptions. And if you go ahead and do it, you won't be wrong. I would rather err on the side of being more literal than trying to smooth it out. Yes?
I think probably in situations like this sometimes it's because we understand the need to be there because of a theological background. Whereas if somebody just read the sentence, they would not necessarily
Yeah, see, glory has to a Christian, glory has a certain definite concept, and it's definitely associated with God. It's not just the general. When you see something in the scripture that talks about glory, you're talking about God's glory. You're not talking about the glory of some hero in the world or something like that. And so, with context, we can go ahead and just put glory without the article and realize that we're talking about some definite concept. But if there's any doubt about it, so forth, then it's better to translate the article the glory. It's a specific kind of glory that you're talking about. Okay, we'll have lots of fun with the article in the second year. Exercise 10F. Refer to the two model sentences which are given below with their English translations, then translate the remaining Greek sentences into English. Okay, sentence A here in the model, ho tu mate tu adelphos blepe ton doulon ton tes cheras. The disciple's brother sees the widow's slave. And sentence B, ton tes cheras doulon hoi adelphoi tu mate tu blepusin. The disciple's brothers, plural, see the widow's slave, singular. Okay, so he's giving those as models so that you, just to give you the information on the verb forms, so you know what they mean, because you haven't had those yet. Okay, then using those as models, number one, how would this be translated? Blepe ton tu dulu mate tain, he chera he tu adelfu. How would we translate that into English? You, Mark?
The brother's widow sees the slave's disciple.
Yes, the brother's widow, or the widow of the brother, sees the slave's disciple, or the disciple of the slave. Okay? The brother's widow sees the slave's disciple. And again, how are we assigning subject and object here? First of all, we see the verb blepe, and that's a singular verb form. Of course, you don't really know that yet from the verb forms, but you can follow it from the analogy of sentence A and B above. And the subject of the sentence is he chera there, but you have a qualifying phrase, a genitive phrase. It's he chera he tu adelfu. So it's the brother's widow, or the widow of the brother, and that's the subject. So you would say the widow's brother sees, and then the accusative, ton tu dulu mate tain. Ton mate tain is your accusative direct object, and the phrase tu dulu modifies that. So the brother's widow sees the slave's disciple. Okay, number two. Tus adelphus, tus ton doulon blepusin, hai ton mate ton cherai. That's a good one for you. Who wants to tackle that one? Glenn?
The widows of the disciples see the slaves of the brothers.
Okay, you want the brothers of the slaves.
Brothers of the
slaves. But the adelphus is the accusative. So the brothers of the slaves, or the slaves' brothers. Okay, good. The widows of the disciples see the brothers of the slaves. The widows of the disciples see the brothers of the slaves. Or the disciples' widows see the slaves' brothers. I'm going to put in possessives. Okay, any questions on the analysis there? If you have any questions as to how these things are broken down and how you decide what is what, be sure and ask them. But again, this is an exercise in discerning your accusative and nominatives as well, picking out your subject and your object. So look for the thing in the accusative, that's the object, the thing in the nominative is the subject, and then the genitive phrases are going to be modifying each one of those. Okay, number three. Ho tu mate tu doulos blepe tain cheran tu adelfu. Yes, Steve?
The disciple's slave sees the brother's widow.
Okay, the disciple's slave sees the brother's widow. Good. Or the slave of the disciple sees the widow of the brother, if you want to use the preposition phrases. Fine. Again, ho doulos is in the nominative, that's the subject. So you have ho doulos blepe tain cheran. So basically the slave sees the widow. But it's the slave qualified by of the disciple. It's the disciple's slave, or the slave of the disciple, and he sees the widow of the brothers, of the brother, excuse me, singular. All right, number four, ho mathetes, ho tu adelphu, tus ton heron dulus blepe. Volunteer on that one? Let's see. Yes,
The brother's disciple sees the widow's slave.
Yes, the brother's disciple sees the widow's, plural, slaves. Slaves, plural. So, or the disciple of the brother sees the slaves, plural, of the widows, plural. Okay? Good. Again, the subject is homothetes. It's qualified by of the brother, so it's the disciple of the brother. And the verb form is at the end, but it's in English that is going to come next. So sees, and then the accusative phrase, tus doulos, is accusative plural, so that's slaves, plural. So it's basically the disciple sees the slaves, but it's the slaves, excuse me, plural. But each one is qualified by that genitive phrase. So the disciple of the brother sees the slaves, plural, of the widows, plural. Okay. And again, you're seeing that the word order is varying all over the map as far as the subject, the object, and the verb. They're varying all over. Now, the word order is somewhat fixed with regard to the genitive phrase, though. That can only occupy one of four positions relative to the thing that it's modifying. So you're seeing them in first attributive, second attributive, first, second predicate positions. But you're not, so they have certain rules governing where they're going to go. Yes?
When you're reading, like, the Pauline epistles in Greek, mm-hmm. is it kind of fun sometimes that, you know, when he writes long,
yes.
to find the verb, and, you know, when you're reading it,
uh-huh, yes.
we start at the beginning and read to the end.
Mm-hmm.
With his, it almost seems like you'd have to just sit there and stare at it for about 5 minutes.
Sometimes in Paul's epistles, of more than any other place, you find that difficulty. And another difficulty is that there are lots of dependent clauses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you will have a lot of verbs and so forth, but there'll be one clause after another. And sometimes a whole clause will serve as the subject of the next clause. And so you get uses of infinitive and so forth. It's lots of fun. It's fun to diagram. We'll do some of that in the second year. We'll diagram Greek sentences. And once we get into Paul's epistles, we'll have diagrams that fill the whole blackboard. You know, it's not a problem at all. Those are lots of fun. Okay. So be thankful for the Greek in John. It's pretty simple and straightforward. Short sentences, simple phrases, not a lot of dependent clauses and so forth. Whereas Paul's epistles, you'll see a lot of that. But that's more of a challenge, you know. Once you get that far, it's not really that difficult. It's just a matter of unraveling a lot of things, and you've got a challenge to look at there. But this is important. You'd be able to pick out your various cases and so forth, assign the functions of these things, and begin to diagram them out and see what's really happening. And that's what you're doing mentally as you read through this. At first, this is going to be very awkward to you because you're used to seeing the subject first, then the verb, then the object. But now you have to get used to looking for nominative, genitive, dative, and accusative case forms and assigning on the basis of those case forms what the function of the noun is. And after a while, that becomes a lot more, a lot easier to do, and it becomes more natural. Then you begin to see, well, it doesn't really matter what the word order is. And you can read through that thing and not have to be turning it around and putting it in English word order. You're just getting the meaning as you go. Okay, take it by faith. It'll happen someday. All right? Number five. Ton tes keras doulon ho ampelos, excuse me, ho adelphos ho tu mathe tu blepe. Translation? Yes. Greg? Yes, the disciple's brother sees the widow's slave, or the brother of the disciple sees the slave of the widow. Brother of the disciple sees the slave of the widow. Questions on any of these? Any fundamental questions as to how we're doing what here? Yes, Steve?
This would mean that if the second predicate is the most common,
they
use one example here that would
be the best. Oh, yes. He's purposely doing that. Yeah, the second predicate position is the most common position, but I think he's purposely using other ones just to get you exposed to them. And the second predicate is also probably the easiest to, because it's more akin to a literal English translation. So I think he's purposely using these other ones so that you get used to them. Okay? But you'll definitely find the second predicate position the most common one. Question?
Just from description of the Greek people, you could hardly see the Greek writing in English because of their flamboyancy, their you know, like his description of how they drive over there. You know, for them to have to sit there and have the same word order, not be able to really express themselves, it would be frustrating.
Well, the Greek has a lot more capability of that kind of expression, especially emphasis.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and people that are more emotional are going to want to emphasize things more. So it may have been, it may be, I don't know which caused the other, but okay, we've got a few minutes left. Let's take a look at the textbook and the dative case. And for next time, I'll go ahead and make this assignment because it's really what you have to do is to get going. It's just like the other exercise. The thing on the genitive. At the end of the first page, he's giving you just a number of examples of the use of the dative, just like we saw with the use of the genitive. So go ahead and do exercises 11A, B, and C for next, Tuesday. 11A, B, and C. And that's just a matter of induction, inductive exercise again, inspecting those forms and then drawing some conclusions just like you did on the other one. So there's really no need to wade through this before you can do that. You've got all you need to do that right now. But let's take a quick look at this so that you get an idea of what's happening. Each of the sentences below contains a noun together with its article in the case form we have not met before. These forms are of the dative case. The student should compare these sentences with their English equivalents, making use of the vocabulary provided. So he gives you some more vocabulary words. A number of these we've already had in our vocabulary. And he's giving a verb form. Edoken gave third person singular verb form here just so that he can make some sentences and you need to worry about the conjugation of verbs here. But let's look at the examples of the sentences. Number one, Edoken he basilisa ton doulon te chera. Now notice te chera, you've got the eta with the oda subscript on the article, and you've got an alpha with the oda subscript on the noun. So this is an ending we haven't seen before. This is the dative case form. And notice what the translation is. The queen gave the widow the slave, or the queen gave the slave to the widow. And in this situation, the word widow, tehera, here in the dative case form is coming out as our indirect object in the English. It's indirect object. And you'll find that this is one of the chief uses of the dative case. Not the only use by any means, but the chief use is to designate the indirect object. And in English, we designate indirect object positionally in the sentence one of two ways. We'll either do it by word order position, like the first example, the queen gave the widow the slave, or we'll do it less ambiguously by using the prepositional phrase to. And we'll say the queen gave the widow to, gave the slave to the widow. That's a less ambiguous way to say it. Okay. So, again, analyzing that sentence, Edoken is the verb, he basilisa is the noun, queen, and ton doulon is in the accusative case, so it's going to be the direct object. It's the thing that's being given. And then te chera is the one to or for whom the action is performed, and that's what we designate as the indirect object. Indirect object is the one to or for whom the action is performed, someone who's benefiting or deriving some benefit from it, but is not the one that's receiving the direct action of the verb. And so simple diagram in English would simply be subject he basilisa, verb edoken, direct object ton doulon, and indirect object te chera. Okay, and then the rest of the sentences are basically like that with variations on the declensions and the number, but the same basic theme. So number sentence two, edoken he basilisa to doulo ten chera. Now we reversed the order of those two words as far as indirect object versus direct object is concerned. Now we put the word to doulo, you see an omega with the oda subscript. That's your second declension dative case form. And that particular form is true for both the neuters and the masculines and the feminines, masculine, feminine, and neuter second declension dative singular. So to doulo ten cheron, that translates the queen gave the slave the widow. Or the queen gave the widow to the slave. The queen gave the widow to the slave. Now slave is the indirect object, and widow is the direct object. The widow is the one that's being given, and is being given to the slave, or for the benefit of the slave. Number three, edoken te basilise, excuse me, accent shifts, ton doulon he chera. Okay, now we've got the same words, but now we've changed the cases. Now it's Hechera that's the subject, because it's in the nominative case. And now it's Te Basilisse, which is the indirect object, and Tondulon is the direct object. So the widow gave the queen the slave, or the widow gave the slave to the queen. The widow gave the slave to the queen. Number four, Te Adelphe He Basilisa Tondulon Edokin. The queen gave the sister the slave. Now the sister, He Te Adelphe, from He Adelphe is the nominative form, but notice the Ada ending is different in each one, because this dative has the Ada with the Yoda subscript. There's no pronunciation difference between the two, although you can tell the difference from the article, because the dative is Te, whereas the nominative will be He. But spelling-wise, this Yoda subscript is a pretty good marker of the dative case, and your eye picks it up right away. So that's kind of a nice feature of the dative case. It's very easy to recognize in Greek because of the presence of the Yoda subscript in most of the forms. Okay, so we'll go ahead and look at some more of those sentences next time, but you've got enough information to do with exercise 11A, B, and C, and we'll go through that next time so we can fill out the last of the case forms that we need to be concerned about and have our total paradigm. Yes, very definitely. You don't want to ignore the Yoda subscripts because they can make a difference in meaning. Always there in the dative case in the singulars. In the plurals, you'll see the presence of an iota, typically in the plurals too, but not in the iota subscript form. It'll be an actual iota. In other words, you'll have ice, ois, forms like that. But in the singulars, you've got the iota subscript.
Oh,
good. Mark it all. Great. Are the tapes, is the quality pretty good? Can you follow the discussions and that kind of thing, questions?
Yeah.
Good.
Listen to
you
do it two times.
Yeah?
Take the whole class in 2-3 hours.
Oh, all right.
Have time left over to study.
Good. Good.
It's good because when you're going...